A bill intended to reduce global warming is up for debate in the U.S. Senate this week, but opponents are lining up against the Lieberman-Warner bill. And the White House is threatening a veto if it passes. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, June the 3rd. And the White House is also threatening to veto the bill. The bill would, among other things, establish a cap and trade system that would limit greenhouse gases while allowing companies to buy and sell the right to emit specified amounts of gases. Proponents say the bill isn't perfect, but it would be a good first step on climate change. Opponents say the bill is too costly and would hurt the economy while making questionable progress on climate change challenges. We will hear from both sides of this hour, and we will welcome your input, too. We start with David Keating, Executive Director of the Club for Growth, which is airing TV spots against the bill. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why are you against the bill?
Well, there are a number of reasons. I think most of the listeners on the program are probably want to do something about carbon emissions because they believe it affects climate. So I think for most of this part of the program, I'll just set aside the controversies about whether humans are having the most impact on this and whether the size of the impact will be something that's worth doing something or not. If you want to do something, this bill is a bad way to do it. It's expensive, and it's going to cause a lot more economic damage for the global warming, climate, carbon-emitting for the buck.
Yeah, what sort of economic damage would it do?
Well, it's a very expensive way to reduce carbon emissions for a number of reasons. One is, this is going to function very much like a tax, but they're not calling it a tax. It's a typical Washington thing to try to hide the cost of what they're doing instead of making it explicit. And there are proposals to tax carbon directly that, compared to this bill, would be cheaper and more effective and do less economic damage. And by hiding what's going on here, it allows Congress to do what it loves to do best, which is hand out goodies to special interests. A lot of these permits to emit carbon are going to be given away to corporations that can then turn around and sell them at a profit. Some of the permits are going to be given away to state governments, tribes. Even environmental groups are going to get permits that they can turn around and sell. So there's going to be a huge explosion in the influence peddling and lobbying industry in Washington, because this type of bill is subject to all kinds of manipulation by insiders who want to get permits given to them for free so they can turn around and sell them, or cut their costs so they will do better than their competitors. And I see that as one of the key problems with this bill. It will turn Washington, which already has too many goodies to hand out, into another place where, according to the bill's proponents, it has, when it was scored by the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan agency for the Congress appointed by the Democratic leadership, that budget office says this bill will pull in the equivalent of over $1 trillion of new revenues over the next 10 years. But they're not going to call it a tax.
Yeah, well, I still don't get it. I mean, that might be kind of smarmy, but how does that,
Most people don't understand they're going to be paying this effectively as a tax, so it allows Congress to hide the cost of the bill. People don't see it. If someone's paying a tax, they know exactly what they're paying for. They know exactly what they're getting for their money. And the second thing is, because Congress is, imagine if Congress passed a bill to say, we're going to give, I don't know, the local utility company or an oil company or a manufacturer, we're going to give them the right to collect and then keep the tax that we're passing on the American public. Well, people would be upset at that. But that's exactly what this bill does. For much of it, I'm not saying all of it's like that, because they're going to auction off many of these carbon rights, you know, the right to emit carbon.
Yeah, I guess I don't mean to be dense, but I don't get how, you know, a cap and trade system is a tax on me.
See, that's exactly what the supporters want. They want to make it so complicated, and they've succeeded in making it complicated. Here's why it's a tax, because they're limiting the number of carbon emissions that can be created. And to do that, what they're doing is they're creating a property right that Congress is, they're creating out of thin air, so to speak, a property right. And you can't emit carbon unless you have one of these permits to emit carbon. And they're going to give away some of these permits to companies that can then decide to either keep them or sell them.
Yeah.
And some companies will have permits that are way more than what they need for their business. So they'll just sell the permits.
Yeah, so what's the tax on me?
Well, when you go to buy something that has carbon built into the price, you're going to pay a higher price. Because part of producing that good or service or utility, you know, your utility bill, there's carbon emissions in almost everything that you buy. So part of what you buy is going to have the cost of this new carbon emission permit built right into it instead of a clear, easy-to-understand
so
tax.
So the companies are going to pass on whatever increased cost that they have or the cost of these permits or whatever. They're going to pass that on to the consumer.
Obviously. I don't know who else they're going to pass it on to, but yes, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. And isn't it worth it, though, if it reduces greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, I'm not arguing here. I'm setting aside whether it's worth it or not. I think there's a real debate about that. But I think what's really important to focus on is how they're going about this bill right now. And you could get far more, you can do much less damage to the economy if you just make this tax visible. And one of the big advantages, I think a lot of people tend to understand this point, which is we've seen huge price volatility right now with gasoline. Gas prices are soaring. You know, they've gone up, they've gone down. I mean, it wasn't too many years ago that gas was $1, even $2 a gallon. Now it's over $4 a gallon in many parts of the country, if not most of the country at this point. And so people are starting to understand that there are huge price changes in things if you cause shortages that kick in quickly.
Yes.
And the industry can't adjust, people can't adjust. I mean, you can't go instantly take your large car and sell it right away or trade it in. You'll get much less money for it.
Let me hold you there because we have a weather break, and I do have the bill sponsor, Joe Lieberman, on tape talking specifically about gas costs and this climate change bill, and we'll talk more about that after the weather break. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, June the 3rd. Coming up later this morning, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will discuss the politics of advertising. She'll be talking with a UW-Madison professor about the advertising we've seen so far in the presidential race. That's coming up after 10 this morning. Right now, we're talking about the climate change bill that the Senate is debating this week. The Senate voted yesterday to proceed with the legislation designed to cut carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases to combat global warming. Yesterday's vote kicks off what is expected to be a contentious week-long debate over how to best address climate change. We are talking with two guests during this hour. First, with an opponent of the legislation during this half hour, and after 7:30, a guest who supports the legislation. The legislation, known as the Lieberman-Warner bill, would establish, among other things, a cap-and-trade system that would limit greenhouse gases. Here's Joe Lieberman talking on Monday.
The administration's own Energy Information Administration, part of the Department of Energy, in its estimate says that this bill, if passed, will raise the cost of gasoline about a little less than 2 cents a gallon per year. The American people would be thrilled to have the price of gasoline raised only 2 cents a gallon per year. And the great news is they'd be particularly thrilled if they felt that 2 cents would be an investment in a whole new set of ways to power their cars and trucks that will actually make the cost of gasoline less.
What's your response to that, David Keating?
Well, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, he's making it sound like if this bill passes that gasoline will only go up 2 cents a year. It's going to go up whatever it goes up plus the 2 cents a year. In fact, I think that estimate is way too low. And the bill goes out into many years in the future, so the 2 cents, if it indeed is that low, and I'm dubious about whether that's true or not, adds up to a lot more money over time.
1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere if you have a thought or a question on this climate change bill that's being debated in the U.S. Senate. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you want to see this thing pass or not? Why or why not? Todd in Appleton is with us first. Hi, Todd, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joey. Good morning to your guests. I think that this whole plan, this is really a far more sinister tax than even what your guest has laid out to be. He's being quite kind. Lieberman's estimate is ridiculously low. Nobody should believe that. It's nothing more than a let's pave the way to get this thing through. But the consequences, like everything in Washington, will be just the unintended consequences will be overwhelming. If you look at the root of this issue in this cap and trade business, Al Gore is at the bottom of this, or part of it. He owns a corporation, or is a founder of a corporation that will benefit directly from trading carbon credits around the world. It's London based, and London is going nuts right now because they're about to throw out their current. Ruling party because they're tired of the taxes that are overwhelming them but accomplishing nothing. But also, he has Gore has a close confidant, who is a former undersecretary of the UN by the name of Maurice Strong. Strong has planned this for years, and one of Strong's quotes is, Isn't the only way to save the world to put an end to the industrialized nations? And isn't it our responsibility to bring that about? So there is much more going on here than what you see. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the Congress, if they go ahead and pass this bill, are playing right into the hands of the globalists and the people. Like Strong, who incidentally made a lot of money in the oil business, as Gore did with Occidental Petroleum.
So is that what's going on here, David Keating? We're trying to destroy industrialized nations?
Well, look, I think some of the supporters might feel that way, but let's think about what Joe Lieberman said just for a minute, because it obviously makes no sense at all. They're trying to reduce carbon emissions by close to 50% over the next 50 years or so. Does anyone seriously believe that people are going to cut their gasoline use by 50% if you raise the price of gas by 2 cents a year? I mean, that's ludicrous on its face. So And the second thing
didn't
is,
you say that we'd be developing? You know,
oh, it's ridiculous. Come on, when is the government come up with a new source of energy? I mean, this is another reason why this bill is a really bad idea. If you want to make energy more expensive, if you want to make carbon more expensive, charge for it directly. And that will cut the special interest manipulation of this whole cap and trade system. It's a cap and tax system, but the tax works in such a complicated way that most people don't understand it. Most of the money is with a carbon tax. What you would do, since everybody would understand it, Congress would be forced politically to return all those taxes back to the American people by tax cuts in other ways, whether it's a payroll tax cut or an income tax cut, or just hand people the money back each year. That would do all the good of cutting carbon that this cap and trade bill with none of the economic damage. And the key reason is people that are emitting carbon will know, okay, there's a price on that carbon emission. We know what the price is. We can plan for it properly.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
Let me finish. Mm-hmm. If you do this trading, No one knows what the trading of the permits is going to cost next year. There may be a short temporary shortage, and the price of the permits go through the roof, or they may award too many. And so there are lots of things that are very volatile, very uncertain. And if you want to get to the problem, do it directly and tax the carbon directly and then return it back to the American people. That will give them the incentive to conserve, but it won't charge them a lot of extra money on net. So you'll change the behavior without having the same economic damage that this will do.
Our Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorialized this week that there's room to improve this bill, and no doubt there will be many attempts from different perspectives, but senators should make sure the core elements remain and should pass a bill that could be a good first step on climate change, because if not, the consequences for the environment are too dire. And I won't list them all off, but it's a good first step, and not acting is going to be worse. Your response to that?
Well, it's a bad first step. If you want to act, make a sensible step. My point is, if you want to act, the sensible way to do it is make carbon emissions directly more expensive by telling people exactly how much the emissions will cost. Companies can plan, individuals can plan. When the government gets that money, they should just turn it back to the American people in the form of a tax cut. So on net, there's no net increase in revenue. But the incentives to change people's behavior will be clear. Cut your use of energy, find less carbon impacting sources of energy. And by having these prices clear, the market will develop cost effective alternatives. Instead of sending the money to Washington by auctioning off these permits and letting a bunch of congressmen and special interests and bureaucrats decide who's going to, you know, what industry is going to get the money, what research is going to get the money. I don't have a lot of trust in Congress. I don't have a lot of trust in the bureaucracy to come up with cost-effective alternatives. It's not going to happen through them.
Yeah. Before we let you go, our next guest is going to make the case also that this bill would spur the creation of a lot of green-collar jobs, that this would be good for the economy in that aspect, and that we would be cranking out all these green-collar jobs, jobs that help in benefiting the environment.
If you change costs in a way that no one understands, it's not going to create jobs compared to what the current situation is. I mean, you're definitely going to lose jobs. The question is how many and where they're going to go. But I think you should ask your guests, what's wrong with just keeping this simple? Why not just charge a tax on carbon emissions, take those tax revenues, and return them to the American people? Wouldn't you get more bang for the buck, less damage for the economy, and more certainty in reducing greenhouse emissions over time?
Yeah.
And I think thoughtful people, most economists that have looked at cap and trade versus a straight carbon tax, they come down, carbon tax is a much more efficient way to do this, much less damage to the economy, the same incentives, better incentives to reducing carbon emissions.
Good. I'll ask them. Thanks for your time. David Keating, Executive Director of the Club for Growth, a group that is opposed to the climate change bill that's being debated this week in the U.S. Senate. We'll get a different perspective after we check the latest news from National Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's 7:36. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Continuing our discussion this hour on the bill being debated in the U.S. Senate this week that would attempt to reduce greenhouse gases and reduce global warming. We heard from an opponent of the bill in our last half hour who said the Lieberman-Warner bill would hurt the economy and not necessarily help the environment. We'll get a different perspective in this half hour. Our guest is Dan Lashoff, Director of the Climate Change Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So you think this Lieberman-Warner bill is a good deal?
I do. I think this is our best opportunity this year to make the needed progress on reducing the pollution that causes global warming. The bill would establish an overall limit on global warming pollution at roughly current levels and then gradually reduce that each year until emissions are reduced by about two-thirds by the middle of the century, which is in line with what scientists say is needed, probably doesn't go far enough, but it's a very good start.
Yeah. Well, our guest in the last half hour said it was a very bad start because I had a hard time following up, but he said this cap and trade system is not only an invitation to all sorts of influence peddling and untoward activities, but that this amounts to a tax on consumers. It will raise prices for everything dealing with energy.
Well, you know, I think that mischaracterizes what the bill does. The primary goal of the bill, again, is to reduce emissions. Now, the mechanism it uses is called cap and trade. This is the same approach that the U.S. has used to reduce the pollution that causes acid rain, and it's been very successful. So the idea is rather than tell each individual facility how much it can emit, it sets an overall limit on emissions and then lets individual sources find the least cost emission reduction. So it provides that flexibility, and the mechanism for doing that is to distribute emission allowances. And the basic idea is for every ton of pollution you put into the atmosphere, at the end of the year, you have to have one emission allowance. Now, those emission allowances are going to have some value, and so one of the big debates that Congress is going to have is how that value should be distributed. A lot of the traditional polluting industries say, give them all to us for free, but what we've seen is if you do that, they still pass on higher costs to consumers, and they just pocket the money. That's what's happened in Europe. So this bill takes a different approach. It distributes some of these allowances for free as a transition, but that gets phased out, and most of the value gets reinvested in the U.S. economy and promoting investments in energy efficiency, renewable energy, carbon capture and sequestration, the clean energy technologies that we're going to need to meet the emission reductions in the bill.
Yeah. So we aren't going to be paying more for energy-related things if this bill passes?
Well, we've looked at that, and there's all kinds of claims flying around. These emission allowances will have a value, and that cost will, to some extent, be passed through to customers, to consumers. But, you know, from a consumer point of view, what we really care about is not what exactly the cents per gallon is at the pump or the cents per kilowatt hour for our electricity. It's actually our monthly bills. How much do we actually pay for energy, accounting for how much we use? And because this bill stimulates energy efficiency improvements, we find that energy bills for the average consumer are likely to actually be lower in 2020 or 2030 under this bill than they would be today. And that's because energy efficiency improvements reduce our demand. And so there's actually a return on that investment.
Yeah. Our guest from the Club for Growth in our last half hour said that I should ask you, why not implement a tax on carbon emissions and not this cap and trade system? He says that would be a much better first step toward global warming.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a common suggestion by people who oppose this legislation. I haven't actually seen many of them actually working to put a tax to reduce carbon emissions either. The goal of this bill is to reduce emissions, and that's what the cap does. If people want to have a debate about fiscal policy, whether it's better to tax pollution versus income or labor, I think that's a useful debate to have. But what this bill is focused on is emission reductions, and that's what the mechanism does. I think the other argument that people kind of throw around is, oh, a tax would be so much simpler. Well, I think anybody who's actually read any part of the U.S. tax code would conclude that while, you know, you can talk about a theoretically simple tax, by the time Congress gets done with it, there's really no reason to believe that a tax approach would be any simpler than this cap approach, and the cap gives us much more certainty about achieving the environmental goals.
Yeah. What's your answer to those opponents to this bill and the Senate Republicans who are arguing that this bill will cause severe economic harm? Won't it?
No, it really won't. And all the government studies of the bill show that the economy continues to grow robustly under this legislation. Some of them project a slight reduction in the rate of growth, but that's far different from the claims that have been made by opponents that this is the end of the American way of life or nonsense like that. I mean, that really just does not withstand any scrutiny. I mean, what we find when we look at this bill is yes, it would require a very substantial investment in clean energy technologies and a shift of investment away from dirty energy technologies. So it does cause some pretty big changes in how we produce and consume energy. But that investment has a huge payoff, both in terms of reduced pollution and in reduced energy expenditures for consumers. So we may pay a little bit more for appliances that are more efficient. We may have better technology built into our cars so that they cost a little bit more coming off the showroom. But the payoff there is less gasoline consumption, less electricity consumption. And when you net that out, the net impact on energy costs from this legislation is quite modest, and the benefits are huge.
Yeah. Don't you also argue that we will see more green-collar jobs created because of this?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we're releasing a report today that details the types of jobs that are needed to retrofit our homes, to build wind turbines, to invest in mass transit. You know, these are jobs such as civil engineers, machinists, industrial truck drivers, insulation installers. So there's a huge opportunity here to reinvest in America to produce the clean energy economy that we need to reduce global warming and to create a lot of good jobs in the process.
John in Grays Lake joins us. Hi, you're on the air.
I have a comment and a question. I support this. I like it because it not only penalizes the people with the heavy footprint, it also rewards the people that are more efficient. And I think it will generate more economy. Right now we need to kind of shift our economy away from an oil-based and coal-based economy, and we need to do it fast. We're coming to the game late, so I like it. My question would be is really, how do you propose to distribute these credits, essentially? Because that is my concern, is that it will be distributed unfairly and it'll actually hurt our effort.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, as I said before, the bill establishes these emission allowances. They're worth billions of dollars, and obviously how they're distributed is a critical decision in implementing this bill. The proposal from Senator Boxer, Lieberman, and Warner has a sort of hybrid approach to distributing the allowances. Initially, some of them are distributed for free based on past emissions. I think the bill does too much of that. But the good news is that those distributions are phased out over time. Most of the value of the emission allowances go either directly to consumers or in some cases indirectly to consumers through distributions to states to help them invest in energy efficiency and mass transit. Some of it goes to electric local distribution companies who are regulated with a requirement that they use that value to provide energy efficiency services for their customers. So it's distributed in a variety of ways. We have more information about how that's done in the bill on our website at www.nrdc.org if you want to look into the details.
Let me check our weather forecast and then invite more callers to join in with your thoughts on this Boxer-Lieberman-Warner bill that would reduce greenhouse gases. Do you want to see this pass in the U.S. Senate this week or not? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email, talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, June the 3rd. Coming up after 8, Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy underwent surgery yesterday to reduce the size of a brain tumor. We'll talk after 8 o'clock with a guest expert about recent advancements in the treatment of brain tumors, talking about brain cancer in general, too, causes, cures. That's coming up after 8. Right now, we're talking about climate change and the bill that's in the U.S. Senate this week that would reduce greenhouse gases. Is this a good deal for the environment and the economy? We are talking with a guest who says, yes, it is a good deal, and wondering what you say. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We heard from a guest in our first half hour from the group Club for Growth. It's airing TV spots advocating for the defeat of this climate change bill. Here's an example of that.
Congress is at it again. This time, they're pushing massive new taxes and regulations in the name of global warming. But let's ask ourselves, are the unproven benefits of legislation worth the major job losses, new taxes, and increased energy costs that could result?
Club for Growth says no. This is not worth it. Our guest this hour says yes, it is. Dan Lashoff, director of the Climate Change Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council. And Dan Lashoff, what's your response to that Club for Growth ad?
Yeah, well, a couple things. First of all, I think it's interesting and indicative that the ad is all about the economics of this debate. So I think one thing that's clear is we've moved on from a debate about whether global warming is a real problem that we need to deal with, and now the debate in the Senate that we'll see is going to be mostly about this cost issue. You know, one of the things that they don't mention in that ad is what's the cost of failing to act to address global warming. And mm-hmm. we looked at that in a report we released a couple of weeks ago. Economists at Tufts University tried to add up the bottom line for us if global warming is left unabated. And the answer, just from four areas that we could provide quantitative estimates of in detail, is that by the end of the century, global warming would cost our economy something like $1.9 trillion a year, or about 1.8% of the GDP in that year. And then, taking a more comprehensive approach, we estimate it could be even twice that much. So there's a huge cost of failing to act on global warming. And I think on the other side, the costs of taking action have been widely exaggerated by some. We find that in fact, the economy will continue to grow robustly and will have a significant benefit in reducing our dependence on imported oil and creating green jobs, installing the clean energy technologies of the 21st century.
It's Joe in Rockford is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm thrilled to hear that we're moving in this direction, although I do kind of have to agree with the first caller that I'm a little unsure of how this will all work, and I'm a little afraid that this cap-and-trade system will turn in to sort of like the hedge funds, and the lobby groups will get in there, and they'll be able to manipulate it, and it'll become a thing where companies and stocks and these caps start getting traded. It becomes a huge snowball that ends up costing people. I agree with the first caller in that people won't understand this, and I don't understand why we don't create a system where if a company produces something that produces a lot of carbon and they have to incorporate the tax on it, and thus we won't buy it, and thus the company will find a different way to produce it. That will also spur a lot of other companies, create a lot of these new green jobs and businesses that will find ways to produce products that don't have a lot of CO2 emissions, and we will buy them instead because they won't be expensive. That will create a whole new companies, whole new jobs, whole new products, and you take it right to the consumers. The consumers understand what they're paying for. It's easy for them to understand. I don't understand why we don't try something like that.
Why don't we try something like that?
Well, I actually think this bill really does exactly that. The mechanism here is a little bit different, but it's easy to get lost in the details, but the basics is pretty simple. This bill establishes a legal limit on the total amount of global warming pollution that companies can put into the atmosphere each year, and that's really what we need to solve the problem. That the thing about using a tax, in addition to all the sort of fiscal debates about what impact that has, is that you just don't know how much emissions are going to be with that approach. So I think this approach is better. I think it ensures that we achieve the environmental goals that this bill is about. I wouldn't claim that the existing bill distributes the value of emission allowances in a perfect way. And the concern that you know, the system could be gamed in some way, I think is a legitimate concern, and so it's going to be important to make sure that there is oversight of this market. I think what I can say is that our experience in the sulfur dioxide program that EPA has implemented since the mid-90s is actually very, very positive. It's achieved the environmental goals at much lower cost than had been anticipated, and there really is no evidence of cheating.
Yeah, Josh in Eau Claire says global warming is just a scare tactic used by politicians, and therefore this bill is unnecessary. Is global warming just a scare tactic?
Well, no, is the simple answer. You know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change won the Nobel Prize last year for doing a rigorous assessment of climate science. Even the Bush administration last week was forced by court order to release an assessment of the effects of global warming on the U.S., and it's very clear once the scientists were unmuzzled that they find that global warming is already affecting the United States and that we face, you know, severe problems in water resources, in disease and public health, particularly for the poor and the elderly who are most vulnerable. So this is a real problem, and we need to move forward with real solutions.
I'm just surprised the Senate is expected to be in a week-long debate, a contentious week-long debate over how to best address climate change, and we're not getting a lot of reactions from listeners. Maybe it's because this is confusing, but what about you? Do you want to see this bill that caps emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, by two-thirds by mid-century? Do you think this ought to pass in Congress or not? 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm wondering, Dan Lashoff, if what do you think this? Do you think the public in general gets this and wants this?
Well, yes, I think that there's very strong support for moving forward with global warming solutions, for investing in clean energy and renewables and energy efficiency. I mean, we find that in every poll. I think the issue has been with the public some confusion about how urgent this is. People don't understand that we're already, as the first caller said, very late to this game, and that our window of opportunity for avoiding the most dangerous impacts is closing very, very fast. So, you know, I think with obviously with the war going on, with the election, you know, there are a lot of issues for people to pay attention to, and I think we all need to do a better job of communicating the urgency of getting started with the emission reductions that are needed to avoid dangerous global warming.
Greg in Lake Dubay joins us. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just calling. The one of the largest sources of pollution in the world today is China, India, all the new developing countries. How are you going to stop them?
Will this hurt the U.S. if we're stopping these emissions in other countries or not?
Yeah, certainly that's an important question. What's clear is that we are not going to be able to solve global warming unless the United States leads, and it's impossible to lead from the back, which is what the Bush administration has been trying to do for 7 years. So this legislation would establish the U.S. as a leader in reducing emissions. There are international negotiations that are moving forward. China and India have indicated that if the U.S. Takes real action, they're prepared to participate in an international solution. And one of the urgent reasons why we need to get this bill enacted as soon as possible is that those negotiations are due to conclude at the end of next year. And the only way to get a global deal is for the U.S. to take action here at home. At the same time, this specific legislation has a number of important provisions that would encourage China and India to participate and would ensure that U.S. energy-intensive firms are not put at a competitive disadvantage while that process is moving forward.
Let me get a quick one from David in De Pere. Hi, David.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're almost out of time. A quick one, please.
All right. I'm in my late 50s, and I remember when we tried to propose the Clean Water Act, people opposed it, yet the results were better than expected in less time than we thought, at lower cost, spurred a whole new industry, new jobs, and helped the economy, actually. The same thing with the Clean Air Act. Everybody opposed it for business reasons. It turned out to be a boom to the economy and spurred new technology, new jobs, new industries. Johnson Controls is a good example. Same thing when it came to getting Freon out and we looked at the ozone.
We're out of time, but you expect, Dan Lashoff, the same thing would happen here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that comment is right on it. Once we get the rules in place, American entrepreneurs will get to work at finding solutions. I'm very confident in that.
Yeah. In our final 30 seconds here, any predictions here? The Senate may or may not pass this week?
Well, we really don't know. I think this is a very important debate to have. It's advanced the process of enacting legislation. We'll have to actually see how people vote, and that's the reason to have these debates and have these votes, and then you know, we plan to hold members of Congress accountable for what they do or don't do over the next week.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Dan Lashoff, Director of the Climate Change Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Thanks to Rob Ferret, Cynthia Schuster, and Michelle Kofel for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.